Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Obamacare is a dagger aimed at the heart of religious freedom in this country.
I think that the health care law is really important. I believe that health care is a human right.
We're praying that this visit of the Holy Father help the Cuban people move towards a future of hope.
If I can show you the resurrection of Christ, a historic, grounded fact, then believing that God created the heavens and the earth, piece of cake.
My name is Mark, and I am a home health physical therapist. And while driving in between patients' homes, I love to listen to Issues Etc.
I think Christians always have the issue of religious liberty in the back of their minds. If only to be thankful that we have it, that we enjoy so much of it here in the United States at really kind of an unprecedented level if we look at it in historical perspective. Few people in the history of the world have enjoyed this kind of religious liberty. Not only the freedom of worship and freedom of thought, but also the freedom of expression of our religious ideas, whatever they may be, in a society that still, to a certain degree, remains an open marketplace of ideas. But the issue of religious liberty has been thrust from the back to the front of our minds recently with the HHS mandate. Not so much what Christians can say or believe or how they worship, but what they have to do, what they might be required to do by law, has a lot to do with the freedom of conscience. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Maggie Carner of LCMS Life and Health Ministries about religious liberty in American history. A little bit later, Carol Tobias will join us. She's president of National Right to Life. We'll talk about a lawsuit involving the state of Texas and the Obama administration over what money has to go to fund Planned Parenthood. And then we'll be talking about some media coverage of religion issues with George Conger of GetReligion.org. You can join us 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Maggie Carner is director of LCMS Life and Health Ministries, author of an article in a recent edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Living Through History. Maggie, welcome back.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Well, I'm a little perturbed. I understand that you were in our neck of the woods recently. You didn't come to visit us. But what brought you to this part of the country?
Well, I was asked to speak at the Missouri State Religious Liberty Rally this last Tuesday in Jefferson City in the rotunda of the Capitol. And that was a really neat experience. There were just thousands and thousands of people there all dressed in red and just completely filling the Capitol and spilling outside the doors. And it was a real shot in the arm to me to see that many people mobilized over this issue.
What did you have to say there?
I talked a little bit about, well, first of all, there were four speakers, and I was the only woman. And so I felt it my responsibility to make sure everybody understood that the HHS mandate has nothing to do with women's issues. It's an issue that affects all Americans, no matter how it's framed in the media or in the public square by various interest groups. This has nothing to do with birth control. It has nothing to do with women's issues. It is at its core and at its base an issue of religious freedom, and it's a threat to the separation of church and state, and it's very scary. every American should be concerned about it. It's not just a woman's issue. And I felt that as a woman, I was able to say that with a little street credibility. So,
what is your response to some who say that folks opposed to the HHS mandate that you mentioned have, their words, declared war on women?
Well, I would flip it around, and I would say that the folks that designed the HHS mandate have declared war on religion. I think it's completely unnecessary. There has never before has the government imposed such a narrow definition of what it sees as a church. It essentially imposes a fine on our faith if we refuse to go against our conscience. And so that's a pretty scary thought. I'm 48, and I've never had to, I guess I'm entering middle age now, but I've never had to deal with this kind of an assault on my belief system before, coming from, you know, the hill and the halls of justice, that, you know, the place in Washington that was designed to protect us from these assaults.
Now, I think some people cynically look at the religious freedom rallies, one of which you took part in, and kind of the kerfuffle that's been around the HHS mandate as, well, kind of the typical Christian grandstanding in a presidential election year. We've got an issue. We're going to grandstand about it, but really for political purposes. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, President Matthew Harrison said it best at the U.S. congressional hearing that he spoke at, was that he'd really rather not be there. We'd rather go back to the business of being a church and proclaiming the good news of the gospel. Frankly, I've been director of life and health ministries for, I guess, 7 years now. I don't have time for this stuff. I'd rather be doing the work that we've been called to do as a church. I'd rather not have to worry about this kind of, you know, threat to me being able to do my work. So as soon as we can get this over and done with and put back in the box and taken care of and eliminated, we can get back to the business of the work that God has called us to do. And I really feel like, you know, this is something that has been foisted on us as the body of Christ. It's something that none of us would relish being involved in. It's a unfortunate byproduct of the culture that we're living in right now, that the church has to be dragged into this. It has nothing to do with politics. And quite frankly, for years, an extensive period before the Affordable Care Act was ever passed, we had done lots to try to inform and work with the government and try to help them understand the specific needs of churches and how we can be an assistance to them in helping eliminate some of the society needs that are out there in the world around us. And we wanted to make sure they understood some of the unique challenges of working alongside church bodies. And apparently everything that we had said went unheeded and ignored, and out comes the Affordable Care Act with a lot of very disconcerting pieces to it that are pretty frightening.
You mentioned Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, appearing on Capitol Hill some weeks back, and mentioned what he had to say there. He was careful to point out that as Lutherans, we do not have the same position on contraception as our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters. But why, nonetheless, whatever that position may be, why is it necessary for us to make common cause in the public square with the Roman Catholics, whose conscience truly is under assault by this mandate?
Well, there's two reasons. First of all, number one, not only, yes, we don't necessarily hold the same position on contraception that the Roman Catholics do, but as the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we are very concerned with any products and services that act as abortifacients, pharmaceuticals that can act to abort an early pregnancy. And some of the products that are included in this HHS mandate do act as abortifacients. So that's a big problem right there, red flag. Right there, it's an assault to my conscience. And so we don't want to have to be forced to pay for products and services that go against our basic understanding of the sanctity of human life. So that's number one. Number two, despite the fact that, you know, whatever your view is on contraception, you can look beyond that and say, hey, wait a minute, stop the presses. Since when has the government ever forced Americans to purchase things against their conscience, specifically the church? The other piece of this is because this mandate has such a narrow definition for what the government sees as a church. This is new. This is unprecedented. There's always been a recognition of the church as a unique entity, and that we have been allowed to opt out of other things that might impose a burden on our conscience. In this situation, there is no way for the church to opt out unless you fall under the government's definition of what a church in air quotes would be. And that narrow definition only allows an organization to be a church if it primarily ministers to and employs people with the same beliefs. Now that's really narrow, very constricting. As the body of Christ, our call to mercy means that we don't have people show their Lutheran identity card at the door before we give them a bag of rice or serve them at the soup kitchen or provide them fair and affordable housing. I worked for years with World Relief and Human Care, LCMS World Relief and Human Care, and we don't use mercy as a carrot on a stick to people out there. We use it as it is our identity as Christians. It's our responsibility and our joy and a blessing for us to be given the privilege to execute mercy to people around us. And it doesn't matter whether those people are sitting in our pews, whether they are confirmed Lutherans, or whether they are atheists in need. It doesn't matter. We're there to be the hands and feet of Christ and give mercy to the world.
Maggie Carner is our guest. She'll be with us for a few minutes on the other side of the break. We'll do a little history lesson on religious liberty with her after this break. Stay tuned. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Apostles Lutheran Church is in Melrose Park, Illinois. We invite you to our divine service, which is held every Sunday at 9:15. Please contact us at 847-455-0903 or check out our website at apostlesmelrosepark.org. We are located just south of O'Hare Airport, where airplanes are continually going up. Here at Apostles, we glory in the one who on the cross was lifted up for the sins of the world.
We have some great programs lined up for you during Holy Week, and here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Holy Week programming. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Holy Week bulletin insert. The bulletin insert can be used for the weekend of Palm Sunday, April 1st. issuesetc.org and click support.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking religious liberty in American history. Maggie Carner is our guest. She's author of an article in a recent edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Living Through History, and she's director of LCMS Life and Health Ministries. It's Thursday afternoon, March the 29th. Maggie, you've written recently about, and you've mentioned this already in our conversation, the long history of religious liberty that Christians and other religions have enjoyed in the United States that seems to be eroding a bit of late. Give us a little bit of a history lesson on how integral to the American experiment religious liberty has been.
Well, this has been kind of fun for me because my husband's a pastor, and it took a call out to Connecticut in New England just a couple years ago, and I'm kind of a history groupie, so this has been an interesting journey for me out here to have all these fun history, hands-on history things to look at since I've been out here. And one of the things that, as a native Midwesterner, I'm not used to everything out here being so crammed together. Up in New England, there's all these little states that are right next to each other, and right next to Connecticut, of course, it takes, half hour to get there. Right next to Connecticut is this little tiny state called Rhode Island, which is usually ignored, and you don't think much about this little tiny coastal state very often, but we went over there and we're digging around, and I remembered from way back in my history lessons that this little place has a pretty significant piece of our corporate country's history. There was a guy there early on in 1636, way before we were founded as a country, and we were just back in doing colonies over here in New England. And a guy by the name of Anglican pastor by the name of Roger Williams decided, I guess back then it was called the Church of England, decided he was going to come over to the New World. But before he came over, he became a Puritan, a separatist at that time, and came over with the Puritans, and was originally invited to take the post at the Church of Boston and turned that down because he saw such corruption. And one of the things that really bothered him of the early Puritan settlements is that there was so much commingling of government and church. And he was pretty progressive thinking and thought that there's just no way that we can continue a government that is muddied with government and religion kind of mixed together in this muddy soup. And so he founded the first permanent settlement for religious asylum in Providence, Rhode Island, because it was a place for people to go that felt that they were not free to practice their beliefs under a puritanical government in other areas of New England. So he was actually bought the land from the Indians in the area and was granted a charter by the King of England to begin this colony for religious asylum in Providence, Rhode Island. And he actually came up, he was the first person to use the term wall of separation between church and state. And he kind of really generated the whole idea of religious freedom and what that means here in this country. And Rhode Island eventually became a welcome place for Baptists, Jewish congregations, Roman Catholics, and all others. It was a really neat mix of religious traditions along the coastline there, and they were all given the freedom to practice their religion openly. And so every time I go over to Rhode Island today, I think about how those folks over there really helped shape the very fiber of that basic freedom that we so often take for granted these days.
In your article, you quote John Gardner, "History never looks like history when you're living through it." Why is that especially appropriate for our time, in this particular time, and our concerns here that we've expressed about religious liberty?
Well, this is a really monumental debate that we're having right now. And just to attest to that fact, the last 3 days of this week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court was discussing the constitutionality of the entire Affordable Care Act, and in particular the individual mandate for coverage. And you know, this is a time when, as a country, we're really looking at what are the limits of government, how far can they go, and especially now as the church, we sit back and say, wait a minute, let's really look at this. How far can the church go to tell us what our consciences are supposed to look like, and what does our faith? How does our faith interact with society? And I don't think as a church body in the United States, we've ever had to have that discussion before. So this is a historical moment in the history of our country.
So finally, with about a minute here, Maggie, when we look back on this, do you think we'll look back on this as a time when our religious liberty was eroded, or when it was able to be maintained?
I am confident that, you know, just coming from that rally a couple days ago in Missouri, that was one of the biggest in the country, from my understanding. I think we're all getting it now. We're starting to really understand that this is not something that we can take for granted. The freedoms that we've been given in this country are a tremendous blessing. And we each have an individual responsibility in the vocation of our citizenship to make sure that those freedoms are maintained for the next generation. And I feel like people are getting it. I'm hearing it out there. I've been involved in this debate for quite some time, like I said, since even before the Affordable Care Act was passed. And now I think people are understanding the scary implications, because if the government can tell us, can tell us what our decisions are going to look like in our health care, especially right now regarding the mandate which has to do with contraception. Does that mean they're going to be able to tell us how to make end-of-life decisions? Is the government going to be able to tell us what parental authority over minors' health care decisions are going to look like? All these things are looming on the horizon, and it's kind of ominous. So they need to. The government needs to understand that when Christians make healthcare decisions because we believe that our body is the temple of the Lord, that there are spiritual aspects that are involved in our healthcare decisions. It's not just not a product for us, and so it's not a consumer product, and it's something that we take very seriously. And so I'm hoping that the government is hearing this message loud and clear in the recent weeks regarding the HHS mandate.
Maggie Carner is director of LCMS Life and Health Ministries. She's author of an article in the recent edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Living Through History. Maggie, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.